It's time for another episode of Just a Bit Outside with your hosts, Stark and Massaro.
Way back, Blue Jays win it! Touch of all, Joe! Brett Favre! Touchdown, Green Bay! Bless you, boys! What a game!
We are live! Welcome to Just a Bit Outside with Stark and Massaro. I am your host, Ian Starkman, and I am joined by my co-host, Mike Massaro. Lots of great sports that we will touch on today, including a surprise game of the week. NFL Week 5 has a lot of misses. College football has a new number one, a heavyweight tilt of the century, and the MLB playoffs are well underway. But first, Mike, how was your sports week?
First off, Stark, happy Thanksgiving to you and the Starkman family, to all our Canadian listeners, and you know what, even our American friends that join us. We do things a little earlier up here, so a happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving. What a bunch of feasts that I've had this weekend. I'm sure you have as well.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Turkey and all the fixings. So, well.
What's your go-to plate, all right? Like, you sit down. What are we putting on the plate if it's at the Massaro house?
Turkey, stuffing, mashed potatoes, cranberry. My grandmother, who's Italian, makes this stuff called polenta dolce, and it's like little squares of, it's basically like cream of wheat with like almost a peach flavoring. It's very, very good. So we always have that at Christmas and Thanksgiving. There's always turnip, but I'm not a big turnip guy. So that's typically the staples for me. How about you?
Yeah, we're a staple type of situation with, you know, the same thing, a little bit of gravy on that turkey, mashed potatoes, corn, you know, a couple of green stuff in there too, just to mix it up. And then, you know, then you got your pies, your whipped creams, your ice creams. You know, we had some cupcakes going. We had a little bit of everything, but it was good to get together with family. I had a little bit of family from out of town that was able to visit too. So that was awesome. I love our Thanksgiving. I know we got some American listeners, but I just think that it's such a big meal that it sits with you for at least a good month. And those Americans, they got to do Thanksgiving 3 weeks later, boom, right into Christmas. You just double downing on turkey stuffing and mashed potatoes. It just seems too much too soon.
Yeah, I even try to make the argument to have turkey on American Thanksgiving. If I'm going to be home watching football all day, I want that full experience, you know. So maybe not so much an actual turkey, maybe just some turkey sandwiches or something. But yeah, no, it's good. Are you guys pumpkin pie people?
I'm pumpkin. We had the option of pumpkin or apple last night.
Yeah, that seems traditional. Yeah, we had pumpkin, and my niece enjoyed the Cool Whip, but not the pumpkin. So she'll grow into it, I'm sure. But aside from that, a good sports weekend. You know, lots of action across numerous sports: college football, NFL, baseball playoffs are heating up. Great boxing match Saturday night. So it's just been, you know, we've been pretty lucky the past couple of weeks. And you know, as hockey and basketball start up, there's even more to watch. So,
yeah, it's really tough to consume it all right now while trying to live a normal life as well. It's becoming a little bit tough. I mean, Saturday, I had to watch all those great primetime college football games. Plus, I was tracking the Leafs final preseason game just to see what was going on over there. And then I flipped over to the Fury Wilder fight. Next thing I knew, it was 1 a.m. and I had an 8 a.m. tee time.
Ugh.
So you can just imagine. It was a rough, rough start to the round. My first drive on the first tee went 80 yards right onto the 10th fairway. Nice lie, but, you know, way to the right. Still made par on the hole. No big deal.
Good recovery.
But I met this legend I got to tell you about on the first tee. So he seems to be this guy. He claims to play 18 holes every day, being the first one to tee off. And he says he does it in about 2 to 2 hours and 15 minutes tops.
Is he walking or riding?
He's walking, and he's a speedster.
No way.
I don't even think he keeps score. I don't even know if him and his buddy putt out. Like, their goal is to get into the clubhouse, have a beer in about less than 2 hours, and they're calling it a successful day. I don't even think they enjoy golf.
Yeah, I don't know, man. 2 hours walking, that it's hard to get that in riding sometimes. They must not be playing as you said, full shots.
No, no. But I mean, we were still pretty quick, 3 hours. It was fun. Fall golf, beautiful weather. You know, you got the trees are changing colors, leaves everywhere. A little tough to find your ball if you hit it into the rough. But played pretty well. Had a great front nine, struggled on the back, lost our team match, but you know, it was fun to be out playing golf and then rushing off to the hockey rink. That's the fall life for me right now. But I have a story that I was hesitant about sharing on the podcast, and telling you and the listeners, Mike. I've told some friends and family over this weekend, trying to decide if I was going to tell this story, because the story makes me look like an idiot.
Please share.
But I am going to share it because that's what we do here. You know, I'm a pretty honest guy, and I think it's important that I tell the story because maybe it'll educate someone and it'll help them down the road as well. Mm-hmm. So for anyone that knows me, I'm not a handy guy. I mean, I have tools. I can tinker a little bit. I can, you know, change a light bulb, maybe hammer some nails into some wood if I have to, but by no means can I really fix anything, okay? Never been handy, wasn't good in shop class, none of that stuff. So about 2-3 weeks ago, my wife mentions to me that in our master bathroom, our two outlets are no longer working. So she's blow drying her hair like in the hallway now, you know what I mean?
Okay.
So I can't really figure out what's going on. I check the breaker. Right? That's where you go first. Breaker seems fine. You know, power's going everywhere. I know on the outside of my house, there's an outlet with a reset button. I go, I double check that, repress the reset button, still nothing. Outlets don't work in our master bedroom. So I use this app that I won't mention what the name is, but you know, they send handyman out to your house and they just charge you through the app. It's really good. I've used it for a bunch of different things. So I order this electrician to come to my house to try to figure out these outlets. Do they need to be replaced? I have no idea.
Right, right.
So the day or two before, my wife mentions to me, you know, it's not just our bathroom. The kids' bathroom outlet doesn't work and the powder room bathroom outlet doesn't work either. This is weird. Why are the three outlets not working? So this guy shows up Friday morning, comes in, younger guy. He's got this little tool. He goes to the powder room, plugs it in. Nope, no power. He's like, he's right. He's like, just check the breaker. I'm like, yeah, I checked the breaker.
Come on.
There's power there. Everything's good. He goes up to the kid's bathroom, plugs it in. Same thing. He's like, yeah, no power here. He pauses for a second. I see him touch the outlet. He's like, go in the master bathroom and check if it's working. I go in there. Plugs are working. I go, what the hell did you just do? He's like, oh, there's just a reset button here. I just pressed it. Thanks a lot. I'll see you later. And out the door. He was in my house for no more than 4 minutes. Okay. He leaves. Now, because I use this app, everything goes funnels through them. So sure enough, Saturday night, about 8:30, 9 o'clock, I'm watching Michigan play. I'm watching Texas A&M. They're taking it on Bama. What a game. I'm having some drinks, enjoying my nice night, trying to relax. Boom. Email comes through on my phone with a receipt for $230 for the electrician to come to my house, spend 4 minutes in my house, and press a reset button in the bathroom that I didn't even know about. I got screwed.
Wow.
And that is why I am the tool of the week, folks.
Just push reset, man. We can push reset on the podcast and untell the story.
I couldn't believe it. What a loser I am.
So now that you know the issue, do you notice the reset button? Like, how did you not see it originally?
I just never went into the kids' bathroom to look at their outlet. I was just more focused on ours. And I was like, oh, if this one's not working, it's got to be something all combined together. I don't know. I don't know electrical work, Mike. I know sports and sales. That's about it.
To be fair, electrician is not, if you are not trained or have any knowledge with any work on electrical work, that's not something you really want to tinker around with, because that can be very, very bad for not only yourself, but your entire house if you screw up. Like, you know, a little odd job woodworking repair here or there, fixing something, you know, you screw up, you can get past it. But electrical and plumbing, you need the right people in for that. So don't beat yourself up too much, although it is a good story.
Yeah, it was about $75 per minute that the gentleman was in my house.
We're in the wrong line of work.
As I mentioned, I'm a sports guy. I know sports, and that's what we're going to talk about. So stick around. Our T5 is coming up right after the break. Before this NFL week started, we all would have guessed the game of the week would have been the Sunday nighter between the Chiefs and Bills. Well, think again. Our T1 game of the week goes to the LA Chargers and the Cleveland Browns, which saw over 1,000 yards gained and 41 points in the fourth quarter alone. These teams were trading leads, but ultimately the Chargers won 47-42. Mike, what did you think of this game?
Originally, I had expected this game to potentially be a bit more of a defensive game. If you looked at both teams coming in, both defenses have been playing, you know, fairly well, and they both have a lot of good playmakers on offense, obviously. So I just kind of felt it'd be a little bit more boring. I'm really glad it wasn't, because, you know, Cleveland was up 20-13 at halftime, and you kind of felt, okay, this is how this game is going to go. You know, maybe they'll get another score or two each to end things off, and that will be that. But then LA comes out, scores 26 of those 41 points in the fourth quarter, and it was just all back and forth. Justin Herbert, close to 400 yards passing, four touchdowns. Baker Mayfield's having some shoulder problems with his non-throwing shoulder, but he had a good day, over 300 yards passing. You know, Austin Eckler, big game for him. Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb, the best running combination in football. It was just,
they're great.
You know, as a guy who is not a fan of either team, it was a great game to watch. Two teams, you know, we both spoke highly about in our preview show a few weeks ago, and two teams that, you know, look to be legit and should be in the thick of things as the season goes on. But just a great game and lots of excitement throughout.
Yeah, so I bet Browns. I picked Browns in my pool. I actually bet on them plus the points. I was the same thinking of, this is going to be a tight game no matter which way it goes. Thinking more, it might be on a low scoring end of a game. So to see the Browns up like that at halftime, like you mentioned, I was like, oh, this is a lock. This bet was great. That's going to be an easy win. You know, maybe the Chargers will get back into it, but I think the Browns can hold on and win it. And I just kept thinking it was over, but the Chargers just didn't go away. And the defense on both teams was awful. I mean, Mayfield, Herbert figured out ways to score on what seemed like long plays. It was passes down the field for catches or passes, you know, short 10 to 15 yard passes, but the guys were breaking free and getting loose to score. Herbert, four TDs, Mayfield, two of them. I mean, these guys played lights out, just going back and forth, which I always love in the NFL when it's two quarterbacks, stud quarterbacks, they're just trading chances back and forth. Nick Chubb, you mentioned 161 yards. He was a beast out there. He had that breakaway speed, which you're seeing a lot more running backs in this day and age, where they're not really just the bang and smash guys. They're the get to open field and start sprinting just as fast as some of these wide receivers. And he's one of these guys. I think he's an electric player. I think he's going to be a great player for years to come. You mentioned that combo that the Browns had. I like both of these teams. I think they both will make the playoffs. Chargers, they now lead the AFC West at 4-1, while the Browns are 3-2 in a very tough AFC North division. I think the Browns are better than the Bengals in their division. I think they're going to challenge for a wild card spot. These are two teams that I like to really go on some runs after an exciting game like this. It's just going to be confidence for both teams.
Yeah, for sure. And I had the Browns winning the division. I still believe that. And we'll see what happens with Baltimore in the coming weeks. But, you know, Chargers go up 42-41 with 3:15 left, miss the extra point.
Always.
And the Browns get the ball. They go 3-and-out. And then LA goes down. I think it was 5 plays, 48 yards for the touchdown. They were worried that they scored with too much time left on the clock. But, you know, they held it out. And this week now, Cleveland hosts Arizona, who are 5-0. That's going to be a great game. And the Chargers are going to play the Ravens, who could very well be 4-1 as well after the Monday nighter. So after a thrilling game, two tough tests for both teams in week 6.
Yeah, it's the new wave NFL too. I mean, 89 points in an NFL game, that sounds more like college.
Yeah.
But these guys were just chucking the ball, looking for scores all the time. I'm sure the defense on both sides will be having some interesting meetings in the coming days after that game. But the offense has to be excited about the way they played. It was a weird Sunday in the NFL, and week five is where our T2 lands. Football can be a heartbreaking game with wins so close you can taste them that get ripped away from you. This week, we saw kickers missing field goals at an alarming rate, and the top teams start to pull away from the field. Mike, tell me how your heart is doing after Mason Crosby missed all those field goals.
It was funny. Going into the week, we were trying to plan out what time dinner was going to be in. You know, everyone in my family is a Packer fan, so the game was going to be on. We were going to be watching it. And my mom asked, she's like, you know, will the game be over by like 4-ish so we can have dinner? And I said, yeah, as long as it doesn't go to overtime, like jokingly.
Sure enough. Famous last words.
Yeah, goes in overtime and almost plays a full 10 minutes. You know, Mason Crosby has been so automatic for Green Bay over the years. I was texting with a couple buddies of mine, and it reminded me of a game a few years back against the Lions where out of nowhere, he missed 3 or 4 field goals. Green Bay went on to lose that game. And, you know, it's just like a one game screw up he has, and then he's usually automatic. So, you know, when he missed 3, McPherson thinks he hits the winner.
Why? I have no idea why he thought it hit. I mean, it hit the little flag on the side. Maybe he thought that was it, but he looked like a weirdo on that one. Bad call.
Well, I saw him and I'm like, oh, it's wide. It's wide. And I saw him celebrate. I'm like, what the hell is he doing? He missed. And then Green Bay gets the ball back in overtime, and you know, Crosby makes up for it with the 49-yarder. It was, you know, it was a weird game overall. Just kind of, I expected a little bit more from both teams. I was expecting more like a, you know, a 38-35 kind of game. But, you know, that's the way it goes sometimes, and drive stall. But, you know, we'll take the win, as ugly as it was, and set up a big one this week between you and me. So.
That's right. I'm sure we'll get to that down the road, too. The game for me I kind of wanted to bring up was the Buffalo Chiefs game on the Sunday nighter. Buffalo sent a message to the league. They're in it to win the Super Bowl this year, and there's no doubt about it now. Josh Allen clearly in the MVP race. He has his team at 4-1 now. They got a stranglehold on the division after they beat the Chiefs here 38-20 in a massive primetime game. I mean, the eyeballs on this game between these two, they're bound to meet each other in the playoffs, I feel. It's just the Chiefs' season is starting slow. And I mentioned that in our preview show that this could happen to them coming off the Super Bowl loss. But now it seems like, is this going to be the whole season, or are they going to flip the switch at some point and start getting, you know, 4 or 5 wins in a row to really get some dominance in the division and some dominance in the conference? Mahomes still looks to be playing well. I don't see any issues with him. I just don't know what it is about the Chiefs, but they're missing something right now.
Yeah, their defense has been bad. Through the first 5 weeks, they're just not playing well at all. And, you know, when you start trailing teams, you got to start forcing things a little more. And I think Mahomes now has as many interceptions in 5 weeks as he did all the last season. You know, until the defense can slow things down for them and stay off the field, they're going to be in these games where they're playing from behind a lot. But I mean, you know, we were talking in our group text. I said, you know, the Bills may be not only the best team right now in the AFC, but in the NFL. I mean, they're playing really good on both sides of the football. And to do what they did at Arrowhead Stadium, which is one of the toughest places to play in the NFL, very impressive win for the Bills.
Yeah. A couple other impressive teams I did want to mention. The Cowboys now 4-1. The Cardinals 5-0, undefeated, last one. They kind of put a stamp on their divisions and are now looking to keep building on what they already have. Both of these offenses are just dominant, especially on Sunday for the Cowboys. 44 points. You had Dak had 300 passing yards. Zeke had 110 yards rushing. CeeDee Lamb had 84 yards receiving. A triple threat, which reminds me of Aikman, Smith, and Irving. I think the Cowboys are legit and for real. This is your weekly reminder that I picked the Cowboys to win the Super Bowl.
I mean, even though they are 4-1, they've looked good in all 5 games they've played.
Yes.
That first game, they could have easily beaten Tampa Bay. And, right. You know, to your point, they are performing incredibly well in offense, but the defense was the big question mark for Dallas going into the season. Dan Quinn has done a great job with this defense through the first 5 games of the season. Doesn't look like they're going to have much – much trouble in the division. And I mean, in the conference, I think they have a really good argument that they are the top team. I mean, they have a great argument for themselves that they are the top team in the NFC. But got a feel for the Giants. So Saquon rolls his ankle, could miss some time. Daniel Jones gets hurt. Kenny Galladay's hurt. Like, it's, you know, especially for Saquon coming back after the ACL, to that was an ugly ankle roll.
Oh, his ankle was just blown up, and it was an accident, really, just stepping on another guy and rolling his ankle. You feel for that. And those injuries start stacking up on a guy. It really affects their career.
And the one thing I just wanted to say about the Cardinals, I mean, you know, they've kind of been an offensive juggernaut through four games. It's nice to see them win a tight game a different way, you know, not overpowering a team, but that's what separates the good from great teams, right? Is winning those tight contests, especially in the division. You know, Rams win on Thursday. Russell Wilson goes down for what is going to seem like a long time, especially for two of my three fantasy teams. And, you know, now it looks like it's going to be Arizona Rams really battling it out here for the coming weeks.
You're so right about the Cardinals, saying that they kind of won this kind of ugly one this past weekend, but still two highlight plays by the Cardinals with Kyler Murray. You know, he just seems to find a way. Finding DeAndre Hopkins for that TD catch with a kind of perfect throw as he jumped just to get it in his hands was unbelievable. And then to march down the field, he made this pass to the seam off to the side for Rondale Moore, who made a circus catch with his tiptoes literally on the edge of the green. This team is fun to watch. They are always looking to go down the field. Murray is just scrambling everywhere and then makes the perfect pass. He's a hell of an athlete. And these guys, they're really fun to watch. It's always a mark it down for myself to be like, hey, Cardinals game, make sure you put it on one of your TVs and watch it. Now, Mike, were there any other games that really stuck out to you? Any other teams you want to mention? No? Okay, well, the Bears beat the Raiders, and they're now 3-2, so look out for them.
Well, this week, Packers-Bears at Soldier Field. It's going to be good, Stark.
It's going to be good. It's going to be good. I know there's going to be lots of chit-chatting back and forth, which I love. But moving on to more football, but this time in the college ranks with our T3. Finally, we have a new number one ranked college football team, with the Georgia Bulldogs taking top spot after beating up on Auburn and then watching the Texas A&M Aggies stun the Alabama Crimson Tide for their first loss in over 600 days. Mike, we have a new top four with Georgia at number one, followed by Iowa, Cincinnati, and Oklahoma. Are you shocked?
Just as everybody predicted.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
No, we talked last week about Cincinnati and Iowa having, you know, a good opportunity of putting themselves in a playoff position.
And even Oklahoma, I said, although they were sloppy, if they could continue to be undefeated, they had a chance to move up there as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, for these teams now, especially Iowa, Cincinnati, who, you know, more so Cincinnati, who is in a weaker conference, they have to win impressively throughout to maintain a top four spot, right? If they drop a game, they probably fall out, and a team like Ohio State or Alabama easily jumps back into the top four. So important for those teams in the top, more so 2, 3, and 4, to keep their foot on the gas here and really play convincing football. I think Georgia deservedly finally gets the number one seed, and I don't see them relinquishing it anytime soon.
No, I agree. I mean, who would have predicted these other three teams? It kind of came out of nowhere or from the dead, but I honestly believe that the committee, they got it right. I mean, these should be the top four teams, and they're making the right decisions based on the teams and not by conferences, which has been an argument in past years about how they select those top four teams, and which has made them think about possibly expanding the playoffs even more to allow for some of these other conferences to have teams in there. Well, these are the four right teams as of right now. Iowa and Cincinnati, they don't have much competition the rest of the way, so they could easily stay undefeated. And I don't think they're going to let go of one of those top spots if they do stay undefeated, unless there's a real serious scare or massive injury that happens to these teams. So I like that. It's going to be some fresh blood in the playoffs. But I did want to talk about Oklahoma, who now squeaked into the number four spot. They're coming off probably the game of the year against Texas. I mean, they have this amazing comeback and Heisman front runner and potential number one overall pick, Spencer Rather, gets pulled for freshman Caleb Williams, who led the Sooners in an epic comeback with over 200 yards passing, two TDs, and a rushing TD. This kid was great. And considering he didn't even play football last year because his high school was shut down because of COVID, and then he steps into this massive game and he brings his team all the way back for the win. I don't know what this means for Rather and what this means for Oklahoma moving forward. They clearly have a QB controversy, but they're going to have to use both of these guys the rest of the way, and they need to stay undefeated to stay in that top four. But I like the way Oklahoma came back. I thought it was a great game.
Yeah, I mean, Texas up 28-7 after the first quarter, 38-20 at halftime, and then the tide just totally shifted. And Caleb Williams was the difference. Who knows? Maybe he gets the start this week. We'll see what happens, or in Oklahoma's next game.
They even brought Rather in after benching him. They brought him in for the two-point conversion right late in the game, which he got. I mean, they got some balls, and if they're going to use them, use both of them if they're that good.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to go back to Rettler, at least you know what you have now in Caleb. He's shown himself to be more than worthy in leading a massive comeback. But, you know, just a great game, and Texas can put up the points. They just can't stop them. And Oklahoma, you know, a good response after a tough first half. So that was a real exciting game. You know, we'll see what happens here if they can keep up the pace. But A&M beating Bama was great. You know, it was a nice segue watching that into what our next topic in the T5 will be, but nice to see the Aggies get it done, and Bama drops and Georgia deservedly takes number one.
Yeah, let's not forget, too, Michigan squeaks out a win to stay undefeated. Now they have to be serious contenders for a top four spot if they can continue to progress the same way. Biggest disappointment for me was number 10, BYU. Thought they really had something going this year. One of those could be one of those surprise teams, but they lose to Boise State, and now they drop to 19th. Season's kind of over for them. And as mentioned last week by me, Michigan State covers again. They're now 4-1-1 against the spread this year, so make sure you mark that on your calendars as you move forward with college football. From Saturday night upsets to Saturday night fight fest, we move to our T4. Fury versus Wilder 3 was pushed back a few months because of COVID, but the anticipation kept growing for these two heavyweights that dominate the division. And they did not disappoint with an 11-round brawl that saw 5 knockdowns. But it was the Gypsy King who knocked out Wilder for the W. Mike, this fight did not disappoint.
No, it didn't. I was not so much on the fence. I just didn't know if I was going to be able to stay up that late to get it in, but I'm sure glad I did. Wilder came out, you know, looking really sharp and spry in the first couple rounds, and really, you know, made up for the last fight. And then Fury kind of knocks him down there in the third round. Wilder responds in the fourth round, knocking Fury down twice, first guy to right ever do that. And it just felt like throughout the course of that fight, one guy would take momentum and you're like, okay, this is going to be over. And then the other guy would respond, or someone would get someone on the ropes. And towards the end of the round, I think it happened a couple times to Wilder where he looked like he was going to be done and then just kind of came to life in the last minute of a round to stave off losing. But you know, I think Fury deservedly won this fight. I think over the course of the 11 rounds, he was, you know, much more lethal with his hitting, with his punches, and, you know, deservedly retains the title.
Yeah, Fury landed 148 punches to Wilder 72. So yeah, he was dominant. That must be exhausted. His arms must be dying this week. But he seemed to be hurt multiple times by Wilder, as you mentioned, who kind of never quit, never backed down. He took the back-to-back standing eight counts, but he still was in the match, even though he might have been a little bit foggy. Now, the second knockdown of Fury, okay, the ref started counting. He got to 3, then he stopped. He told Wilder to move back, which gave Fury like an extra 5 seconds. He was kind of lounging on the ground for a little bit. You know, some red flags a little bit there in the boxing world seemed a little odd, but they let it go on, and I'm glad they did. It made the match, you know, that much more entertaining. Great boxing. I love it when boxing is like this with the heavyweights, where any punch could be a knockout. Any punch could make a shift in the way the match is going. it's better than UFC when you got the top guys going. I'd rather see a clobber knocker that is a lot more entertaining than a wrestling match on the ground with UFC. That's my only argument for boxing versus UFC. I want to see the knockdowns. I want to see the big guys fight. It was great. I'd rather see that than like a snapped ankle in a UFC match.
Yeah, I hear you. I agree. I mean, you know, these two guys are probably the top two in the world. And I think this was probably the best fight of the three. I think Fury's won all three, to be fair.
Right.
But, you know, the first one was a split decision there. So, and the second one was really underwhelming.
Agreed. The first one was a draw, you know, some controversy on that. Second one, Fury won. Underwhelming, as Mike said, was the best way to describe it. This one was awesome. Now the question is, do they go for a fourth?
I don't know. I think a lot's going to depend looking into it. You know, there was talks of Dillian White potentially being the next guy in line. I think he has a fight later in October. If he wins that, he could be next in line for Fury. So, I mean, I don't know. To do it a fourth time, I feel like Wilder needs to have another fight, get the win, and get himself back on track. I mean, to do it again so close, a fourth installment, I kind of like to see them go different directions for at least one fight and then maybe end up back together.
Mixed in with all the sports this weekend was the only one that is currently in the playoffs, and that will be our T5. The MLB Division Series have been outstanding as all eight teams have wins and offense has been aplenty. I will try not to bring up the fact that the Blue Jays would be the best team still in the playoffs if they were playing, but let me dive into the Rays and Red Sox first. Tampa Bay has been the better team all around, including their hitting, which was one of the best in the MLB all season long. But Boston is just that grinding team. They're never out of it. They always got a chance, especially when the game's in Fenway. Now, we did have some controversy in game three. Not sure if anyone saw, but the game was tied. It was extra innings. Great game going on. Kiermaier hit a line drive to right center with a runner on first base. The ball hits the wall. It then comes back and bounces off the right fielder, Hunter Renfro, and then over the short fence in Boston. Now, it was ruled a ground rule double, and the runner who was on first had to only go two bases. So, therefore, he had to stop at third base. Even though, if the ball had just hit the fence again and stayed in play, he would have easily scored, and Kiermaier probably would have got right to third base. They had to review it. Technically, the rule, the call, it was right. But man, did the Rays get screwed, because Boston got out of the inning on the next batter. And then sure enough, in the bottom half, Vasquez hits a walk-off two-run home run to win the game. You can't script this stuff. October baseball, it just happens like a movie. Every year, something outstanding happens.
Yeah, it's, you know, unfortunate that play, you know, if it's done again, probably the chances of it deflecting off of him and going over maybe aren't as high. It's just one of those weird bounces. Unfortunately for Tampa, the rule is the rule. They got it right. And, you know, they couldn't do anything after that. They couldn't get the guys in. But, you know, to your point, Boston's a scrappy team. You give them, you know, a little inch and they're going to find it. And, you know, they're up 2-1 here. So, tough series, and you feel for the Rays because, like you said, they are a really good team, and it's just, you know, the unfortunate part of sports sometimes. The bounces don't go your way and calls don't go your way, but I think in this instance, the right call was made. Kind of reminds me when Canseco took one off the head and it was a home run years ago, but that's the way it goes sometimes.
That one's always on the blooper reels. One of the series is probably talked about the least, but if anyone who's watching, it might be one of the best, has been the Brewers and the Braves. It's been a great series, a little bit more defensive pitching gems. The first game was only a 2-1 win by the Brewers. I love seeing a good guy, former Blue Jay, Rowdy Tellez. He had a huge home run in game game one, played some great defense at first base. Happy to see him back in the league, having some success after a downfall with the Jays earlier this year. And then the Dodgers-Giants, the most talked about series going in. This one has to go the distance. It has to go five games. They are the best two teams in baseball. It's sad they're playing this early and only a five-game series versus a seven in the actual National League Championship Series. But these guys have great pitching, great hitting, and they're exciting baseball games to watch.
Yeah, as baseball fans, it's a little unfortunate we may only get five games instead of seven from this series. And that was my argument last week. You know, why is the top team playing the wild card team? They we talked about that. We don't need to rehash that. But this would have made a beautiful division or NL championship series. I think both series in the NL could easily go five games. They exchange games one and two, and both series could easily go five. And the AL, I mean, I don't know. I think Houston finishes it off. They probably should have in game three, but now there's some chatter from Ryan Tepera about potential sign stealing and everything again. That's kicked up. So it's, always a good storyline, regardless of the fact that Jays aren't in. My interest wanes a little bit without the Blue Jays there, but still, it's playoff baseball, and it's pretty good.
Playoff baseball, it's the best. Every pitch counts. Every batter matters. There's always a chance to get runs back. You're never out of the game, and that's what makes playoff baseball so good. I love it. I think all four of these series have real potential of going the distance, which would be amazing to see. I love the way the MLB does it, having the American League play on one day, the National League play on another day, and then bam, all four of them in one day together. It's been great to see this long weekend for us here in Canada, at least. Again, just too bad the Jays would have been playing tonight on Monday at home, Rogers Center, but maybe next year. But hey, let's move on to our football picks. Now, week five, Mike proved that he is the man with his third consecutive week of going 3-1. He had the Rams, the Cardinals, and the Bills. I only had the Steelers. The season series is now led by Mike 13-7. I need a big one. I need to get going, and I need to lead it off properly. I get to pick first this week, Mike, but let's first check out the games. Thursday night, we got the Tampa Bay Buccaneers -7 at the Philadelphia Eagles. We then move to the big 1 o'clock game as the Green Bay Packers are -4.5 at the Chicago Bears. The 4 o'clock game sees Cleveland -2.5 at home against the Arizona Cardinals. And then the Sunday nighter sees the Pittsburgh Steelers -4.5 hosting the Seattle Seahawks. Now I'm going to start it off and I'm going to go right to the Sunday nighter. Now that we know Russell Wilson is out, I know that there are some injuries on the Steelers as well. Juju possibly done for the year too. But I like the way the Steelers have been playing. I've been picking them quite a bit and it's been helping me. So I'm going to go the Steelers -4.5.
I got Geno Smith and Mr. Nebeta on my side in that one. I'm going to be strategic here, Stark, to be a bit of a prick.
I like it.
I like the Browns, and I think this is going to be a good test for the Cardinals. I'm really looking forward to this game. I'm taking the Browns at home -2.5.
Oh, I will take that one. Thank you very much. Kyler Murray +2.5 points. Love it. Now, I'm going to stick you with the game of the week, so I'm going to pick the Thursday nighter. I've said this at the start of the year. I'm not betting against Tom Brady ever again. So I will take the Bucs -7, even though they're on the road in Philadelphia. He'll dominate those guys.
Not too confident in your Chicago Bears, eh? I strategically went Cleveland, hoping you would have to take that maybe Green Bay-Chicago game. But we know what's going to happen anyways with our picks, at least anyways. So I'm taking Packers -4.5, and I'm sure you're fine with that.
Very fine with it. So to recap, I got the Bucs -7, while Mike has the Eagles. Mike has the Green Bay Packers -4.5, while I got the Bears. Mike also is taking the Cleveland Browns -2.5, and I got the Cardinals. And then the Sunday nighter, I have the Pittsburgh Steelers -4.5, and Mike will take the points with Seattle. So that wraps up our T5. We have a short break, and then we showcase our thoughts on some important topics in Here's the Deal. So stick around. On this podcast, we do enough back and forth. Now is the time for Mike and I to each pick one topic that we have been dying to talk about and share our thoughts and hot takes, while the other co-host shuts his yapper. Mike, I will let you start off this week's Here's the Deal.
For me, I'm going where the heart is for me, and that's the sport of soccer. Canadian soccer fans, we've been fortunate to have a lot of good success this year. The women's team winning gold at the Summer Olympics, and now the men's team is on quite the roll in 2022 FIFA World Cup qualifying. On Thursday night, Canada went into Mexico at Azteca Stadium and earned a 1-1 draw against the CONCACAF leading Mexican side. Jonathan Osorio's goal in the 42nd minute was the first goal scored by a Canadian soccer player at the Azteca since 1993. The massive result here should not be overlooked. Teams typically do not go into Mexico City and fare well against the Mexican national team. So what Canada did going in and getting a point is huge. And I think that needs to be celebrated. And that's could be very important when all is said and done here in March of 2022 when qualification's over. On Sunday, they went to Kingston, Jamaica, tied Jamaica 0-0, and now have their final game of this leg of qualifiers on Wednesday night at BMO Field against Panama. Currently, Mexico leads things at 11 points. The U.S. and Panama are in a tie for second/third with 8 points. Canada has 7 and are one of 2 undefeated teams remaining between Mexico and Canada. After Wednesday, there's 2 games left to close out 2021. Both home games in November, Costa Rica and Mexico, location to be determined, but you know, things are going really well for Canada. This is the first time they're in the final round of World Cup qualifying since 1997. Currently ranked 51st in the world, which has been the highest ranking they've had in quite a while. But I've said this time and time again, there are so many very good players on this team. I think John Herdman's done a hell of a job to this point, and there's reasons for optimism. And I really hope that Canadian soccer fans continue to get behind this. I truly believe they're going to get it done and will be in Qatar next year. And we're going to see a lot of Canadian flags come World Cup time. So good results through 5 games. Let's finish it off right Wednesday night against Panama. And we'll get going again in November. So hats off to the Canadian men's team. A hell of a run through 5 games. And let's keep it going.
The NHL season is set to start this week, and although the sting of losing a 3-1 series lead to the Montreal Canadiens is still fresh in my mind and the minds of many Leafs fans, the idea of a new season should bring hope and optimism. At the end of the playoffs, many so-called Maple Leafs fans were upset and frustrated with the team and even went as far to say they were no longer Leafs fans, or they would not watch a regular season game this season. Well, here's the deal. If you're one of these people, we don't want you. We have a great team, a talented team that will only have a small window to be together and to make something special happen. Yes, last year was a disappointment, but that has nothing to do with this year. They are going to win a lot of games and make some exciting plays. There will be mistakes and setbacks, but that is the enjoyment of sports season. That is the enjoyment of being a sports fan. You ride that roller coaster with your team so that when the payoff is there, you can cherish it even more. But it does come with some risk of heartbreak, and that's okay. That's what we sign up for. We've had so many years of Leafs fans with nothing to root for and bad teams filled with bad players. Now we have one of the best teams in the league with some of the top players in the world wearing the blue and white. So to you so-called fans that have given up on this team, take a hike. I don't want you sniffing around and gathering for playoff parties in the spring. If you're out for the journey, you have to be out for the prize. Now, each week, Mike and I will give you our best bet of the week to help you make some cash. Last week, Mike had Iowa that covered, and I had Georgia who covered. I have now won 4 of my last 5 locks of the week, so I will continue to give out winners, and I will start us off. And this week, we turn to the ice, the home opener of the Toronto Maple Leafs as they host the Montreal Canadiens on Wednesday night. Montreal will be without Price, Weber, and Danault, the 3 who were instrumental in beating the Leafs in the playoffs last spring. It is message sending time. And I'm not just picking the Leafs to win. I'm picking the Leafs -1.5 at +140 to really make you some cash. So go out there and lock this one in.
I'm sticking with the gridiron on the collegiate level. On Saturday, the 12th-ranked Oklahoma State Cowboys, who are undefeated, head to Austin to play the 25th-ranked Texas Longhorns. Texas, -5. I'm taking them to cover. I was impressed by the offense. I think this will be a good test for Oklahoma State in Austin. The Longhorns, -5. And I like the over at 60.5. This could be another big game. I'm going for it. Texas, -5. And the over, 60.5.
Wow. A double banger for Mike to get back in the groove. I like it. I like it. I do try to stay away from double betting the same game, but you got some confidence. Horns up for you this weekend. Now, we want to hear from you. Make sure to comment on the pod wherever you download your podcast and let us know your thoughts on Twitter and Instagram. We would love the feedback. Check us out on Instagram and Twitter at JABOPod, thestringer.ca, and find Mike and I on Twitter to see our thoughts on all the sports throughout the week. Please subscribe, like, and rate our show, and do us a favor and tell a friend to listen. And as always, clear eyes.
Full hearts.
Can't lose.
Oh, yeah.